Good morning, everyone. I am super thankful to be here this morning. As Robbie mentioned, my name is Johan. For those of you who might not know me, I am currently from Kericha. And a couple of months back, we were part of Warmer AM, as some of you might recall. And I'm so thankful for that. And even before that, my wife and I were leading Village Church for about 6 years. Some of you came and visited us, did some outreach, and just connected with us. And I think for the last, let's call it four and a half years, that we as a family have been connecting with the 412 churches and all you guys, it's just been such a tremendous growth point, if you will. Seeing how the Lord continues to grow us as a family, continue to grow His church. And just if I think about the 6 years that we were leading Village Church, like there was so much growth. Like you think you know and you think you've got it all figured out. And just every single day, the Lord just continuously adds and helps you realize how little you very much do know. And then we joined Warmer AM thinking, okay, wonderful. We're part of this beautiful team and everything's just going to be beautiful. And it was, don't get me wrong. But then you are surrounded by these beautiful, beautiful, mature-hearted Christian elders and saints and deacons and just everything in between. And I really have to say that I think it was 5 or 6 months that we were part of Warmer AM, it was such a growth period. Not in a bad way, just seeing the levels of maturity, the levels of love that the Lord has bestowed in His church. Seeing the different facets and the different beauties and the things that the Lord highlights through His individuals. I just actually want to take a moment, like this wasn't fully part of my notes, like I was thinking maybe to share it, maybe not. But I feel I need to take a moment and just acknowledge, for example, the team that we were part of here on Warmer AM, just with the eldership that you guys are a part of. Seeing how they interact, not only with each other, but with their spouses, but at the same time, how they speak about the individuals within the church. I think still, to this day, my wife and I will never be able to figure it out. One person, one elder who's overseeing a comm group would mention a name out of love or concern or what, but a name would be mentioned. Now, we would be new and we know that the church is big. We know that there are a lot of people. And then every single other elder in the room would know exactly who they're talking about. And I know that we've been walking a road with you, but the love and compassion, how they know their sheep, how they have compassion and they care, like it blew me away. Like the intentionality that they have in caring for each and every single one of you is amazing. And then we moved to Kericha, where we have a soft move because we're there in spirit and in body, but our stuff's still here. We're moving at the end of Jan. So we've been driving through and joining the team there with George and Alf on eldership there. It's been amazing. And you think you've seen it all, and then you join that side, and then it's just this beautiful culmination of a different facet of God's love and maturity. And like it's this beautiful growth, and even how we were welcomed by you guys, random letters and connection and dinners, and the same even on that side. And I want to encourage us, like if you don't know what that means, I'm starting with an altar call, like right at the start. No, I'm not. But if there's something in that you haven't experienced it, I want to encourage you, get connected. Like the beauty of what we've seen in God's church and the way that God has designed His church to be isn't just for an attendance. It's for a life. It's for connection. It's deep love and maturity. But now I'm done stunting or punting the church. Like it's true. Like really. Like if you get nothing from today, please just get that. Get connected and love God's people. But in any case, at the start of this year, it was one of those years where I thought this was going to be a good year. My wife and I had this idea that this was going to be a good year in the sense of like we're starting a holiday for the first time in I don't know how long. And before you knew it, life just started hitting. Like we had tragedy with death in the family, and we had more difficulties and this struggle and that struggle. And then we moved this side, which was a beautiful upliftment. And then it's just more things. And then you start realizing people go through things in certain times. And it's when this time of year, when we start reflecting on our own lives, I don't know about you, but when it comes to Christmas time, New Year's, like you have the sense of, I need to reevaluate my life. And I want to make some changes. I remember when I was in high school, there was this idea, this big push for New Year's resolutions, like the secret key to unlocking the successful you, your ultimate life. This was before self-development books, which at that stage were still semi-called self-help books, before you could just name it and claim it, and before you could just associate it as being true. So that was way back when, but New Year's resolutions were a thing. They were a thing where at the start, you make a commitment to yourself, you make it audibly known to everyone else, and by the third of January, you sort of realize, okay, but maybe not. Like, maybe I was trying to pick up too much weight. And I think at the heart of it, like, there's beauty in that, because we need to be in seasons in our life where we reevaluate things. A friend of mine always used to say that how you end the year is how you start. Because I think what sometimes happens, some of you, whose bed here was made this morning? I just quickly want to see, by raise of hand, let's name and shame. No, I'm just kidding. For those of you whose bed weren't made, I want to give a surprise to you. When you get home, that bed is still not going to be made. Like, I know you know this, and I don't really care. I'm very thankful for my wife who made the bed this morning. I do sometimes make the bed. She can vouch. Say yes, my love. Yes. Okay. And okay, so I do that. But one thing that I've noticed, like, when you don't do something and you go away and you come back, it's still there. And even how we start this new year, all the things that we're escaping from, it's still going to be there. But the thing is, what I want is I want more of this yes, because we need to realize that we're starting this year in excitement. What I feel what the Lord wants to lay on us this morning is that we dedicate this year and we start this year and make it the year of the Lord, if you will, to align what we thought we might have wanted to make our bed or whatever it is that your goals is for the year, go for it. But actually align those goals with what the Lord is praying for, not only for your life, but those around us. And I feel that's what the Lord is laying on our hearts this morning. It's not going to be a difficult message. I feel it's an encouraging message. But before we start, I quickly want to do one practical thing, if you'd allow me. For those of you who have notebooks and things, just bear with me. You're going to be angry at me for a moment, but that's fine. Quickly, if everyone can sort of move to the edge of the seat just for a moment, just scooch up to the front. Still stay seated. Okay, now you're on the edge. You're feeling it here right below your belt, right? Now I want everyone to quickly get up for a moment and wonder why what's going on. Everybody get up for a moment, please. And for those of you who don't have notebooks in your hand, I'm going to count to three. Then everyone needs to clap their hands just once. Okay, so everyone can do it. We don't need to go. So one, two. There you go. You're more than welcome to have your seat again. Thank you so much. Now, and the reason for this is multifaceted. Number one, some of you think I'm crazy. Some of you think that was fun. But the heart of it, whenever Vince asks how this morning went, I can give feedback. They say that I had you on the edge of your seat and you all gave me a standing ovation. Like, I just had to get that out. Like, that's just true. But in all seriousness, we need to start with this type of smile, because how we enter or how we exit this year with this type of smile and motivation, that's how we're going to start. Okay, everybody, now remember what you need to tell Vince. In any case, so we're going to start off with one of Jesus's prayers, a prayer that he has for the nations, but also for us as individuals. And I think this is something that we need to believe. Now, if I had a title for this message, I generally don't do this, but my wife says it's a good idea, so I need to share it. And it says, we are sent and set apart. That's what we are. We are sent and we're set apart. And I feel that the Lord wants to do something there, because I feel that we are able and invited to participate in what the Lord is praying for. Now, we're going to start off with John 17, verse 13, and it says, now I am coming to you. This is Jesus speaking to the Father, and he's essentially doing a bit of a review. This is close to the end. It's his final night. He's praying. He's sharing some things with, he shared with his disciples, and now he's praying to the Lord. And he says, now I am coming to you. I have told them many things while I was with them in this world, so they would be filled with great joy. Remember the smile you had? Filled with great joy. That's the Lord's heart for us. But now, after this, he's going to tell us, how do we get that joy? How do we walk in that joy? And he's sort of giving feedback, and he tells the Father what he did, sort of as a review. And he says, I have given them your word, and the world hates them because they do not belong to the world, just as I do not belong to the world. I'm not asking you to take them out of the world, but that you keep them safe from the evil one. He's not calling us to be removed from the world. He's calling us to be in the world. They do not belong to this world any more than I do. So the foundation that I sort of want to set this morning is, so I have 3 points, but one foundation. So the foundation of it is, we are called to be in this world, but not to be a part of this world. And there's a difference. And I think it's not so easy for us to always remember this. I was even speaking to someone earlier today, and it's difficult because you want to be with people, but at the same time, when you are with people, it sort of feels like sometimes, and you're not judging, but you realize that the way that they reason or where they're reasoning from is not the way that we reason. We're reasoning from the Bible. We're reasoning from our quiet time. But sometimes those around you don't reason from their place. And it's difficult because how do you love but at the same time not judge? Because at the heart of it, we know that we have this responsibility to withdraw ourselves from sin, to withdraw ourselves from the evil in this world. But then Paul actually speaks in 1 Corinthians 5, verse 9 to 11, and he says, when I wrote to you before, and by the way, he wrote and said he had to kick someone out of church, essentially, to discipline them out with the hope that they would return. And by the way, spoiler alert, he came back. It's wonderful. But in any case, so I wrote to you before, and I told you not to associate with people who indulge in sexual sin. But I wasn't talking about unbelievers who indulge in sexual sin or are greedy or who cheat people or who worship idols. You would have to leave this world to avoid people like that. Paul acknowledges the fact that we can't isolate ourselves to that extent. I know there's so many men, not me, who want to go up into a cabin in the woods with a beautiful lake and just be self-sustaining. And just like there's no call centers, there's no struggling technology that doesn't work. It's just beautiful peace. It's just beautiful, you're just being there. But that's not what the Lord has called us to. He's called us to be in the world. Even Paul, he says, you would have to leave the world to experience that. Then he carries on and he says, I meant that you not associate with anyone who claims to be a believer yet indulges in sexual sin or is greedy or worships idols or is abusive or is a drunkard or cheats people. Don't even eat with such people. He's making a distinction that we as Christians need to be set apart. We need to be different than the world. Not out of an obligation because we need to, but out of an overflow of what the Lord has done for us. This is what the Lord has called us to. And so many of us have even experienced this week. You know, you have family visiting and everybody's reasoning from different perspective and there's conversations about this cousin and that one happened to this one. And all of you are thinking like, should I join the conversation? Should I not? But by the way, did you hear this? And it's like, it's that in-between section where you're trying to figure out like, what should I do? Where's my line? Like, where would Jesus enter the conversation and where would he withdraw? It's difficult. But I feel that even in us looking at this, we have a foundation of what the Lord wants to lead us to as we go through his prayer. Because we need to remember as the foundation that the whole point of the gospel is for us to reach those people who yet are still to know. At the end of the day, we were once those people. Maybe you're still that person now, and I say that with love and compassion. Maybe you're still trying to figure out, like, what does this really mean? I'm still trying to figure out, like, Lord, do you really love me? Am I really worth it all? Like, what did you do? And I feel the Lord is calling us to more. Because the danger is, and I don't think that we realize this so often, but the danger that we face, the moment we start isolating ourselves, if it's not unchecked, if we don't have that balance that the Lord has called us to, we end up villainating and alienating everyone else. And it's the world against us. It's only us who really believe. And we form this holy huddle in church where no one is allowed to come in. Even Christians need to stay here for a couple of weeks or months and prove their worthiness and raise their hands at least 3 times in worship before we allow them in a braai. Like that inevitably happens. It's not intentional because we're trying to make sure that we remove all drama. We're trying to intentionally safeguard ourselves against everything that's evil because we know the peace the Lord gives us. It comes from a good place. But I feel the Lord wants to remind us that we need to be in the world, but not of the world. Lastly, on this point, we even have Proverbs 18, verse 1, and it says, whoever isolates himself seeks his own desire, he breaks out against all sound judgment. And that's difficult because sometimes there is space. I want to make clear, disclaimer, the Lord calls us to withdraw to quiet places, to have a quiet time, to spend a day by yourself, to spend time with him and with believers. But may we never forsake those we have been sent to connect with and to save. Carrying on with Jesus' prayer, make them holy by your truth in verse 17. Teach them your word, which is truth. The second point that the Lord wants to highlight in us is his desire for us to be holy. At some times he has this sort of suggestion, but at the same time he gives a commandment that we are called to be holy as he is holy. That's what he has called us to, friends. And the thing is, sometimes I've spoken to people who have a misunderstanding of this, and very much the same misunderstanding that I had for a very long season in my life. Because at one stage, I thought being holy meant removing myself from everything, removing myself from anything that was sinful or even close to it. Like, this is definitely not part of my notes, and don't judge me afterwards. I'm saying this at the front. I remember there was a stage in my life where I was so scared to get close to the evilness, anything that had a triangle, or even associated closely to the Illuminati or unseen eye, or any, if it had a triangle in it, it was of the devil. I kid you not, I threw away CDs that literally had a triangle on there because for the sake of the Lord, and I did it with joy and fervor, and I remind myself of Paul, of just this, like, I will do it for the Lord. And then afterwards, I reflect on my life and say, really? I missed the point completely. Because part of sanctification, this big word that we like to use to sound important, it's like becoming holy. But there's a withdrawal from sin. But with that, it's a drawing towards God, drawing towards what is holy. We can't just stop smoking or stop drinking. You need to pick up something else. You need to pick up holiness. You need to pick up joy. I've spoken to so many people who just, I don't want to be a Christian. I don't want to let go of that. And I think the thing is, because when we share, we often talk about this thing and not the thing that we can actually pick up. Well, I was so excited this morning about that scripture that was shared this morning in Psalm 75. And I just quickly want to touch on it. It's not part of the notes. And it says, Psalm 75, verse 1. We give thanks to you, O God. We give thanks for your name is near. We recount your wondrous deeds. And then it carries on and speaks about a coming judgment. But at the same time, it also speaks about how having that joy in the Lord. There's something in that psalm that I just love. You know, sometimes it says there at the top, this is a psalm that happened at this and this time. This psalm doesn't have that. This is just because it's Tuesday. Let's just be thankful for the Lord for the day that it is. The Lord is calling us to be thankful. And when we start doing that, everyone around us will start having a more clear idea of what it means to follow in the faith. But in order to do this, we need to realize that I never should be the best me that I can ever be. I need to be the best he I can ever be. But we constantly want to be the best me and like what is right for me and what do I deserve. And the Lord is calling us to be more. And that's so glorious because it means that you can exceed all of your expectations. Every single time, like I shared, every time we went through this trial period of first in Bathurst and then here in PE, which is short for Kwabega, and now in Kariga, which is long for Utenek. But in this season, I've realized every time there's a next level of maturity, a next level of love. Like really, like I think for the first month, all that my wife and I could speak about was how on earth could people be this welcoming? It was literally like, and we know the Lord, we love people, and we know so many of you. But yet there was something about how everyone just embraced us. And that was before we even announced as elders. Well, elder and elder's wife. But you get the point. That was before that. It was just, oh, you're new. Come for dinner. Like it's and it wasn't okay, come for dinner. It's like a real come for dinner. And they meant it. And it still astounds us. But the thing is, what happens is we start justifying by ourselves. When we start thinking about that I'm right and I deserve. And I remember speaking to I teach English over the internet. And I remember speaking to one of my students. And at one point they said, but we were talking about the Lord, which is not really what we should be talking about. But we were practicing conversation English. So these things just sort of come up in conversation. Any case, so they're talking about right and wrong. And he said, and they brought up this picture that I want to show at the top here where it says, some people see a 6 and some people see a 9. You cannot tell me what is right because from your perspective, that is true. And from my perspective, it is true. And I remember having the phone to my ear and I realized for a moment, like, Lord, now what? Like, because that's a valid point. And it sounds right. And I was just like, the Lord just laid this bomb on my heart. And he was just saying, like, who drew the number? That's the person who knows. Like, you can be on that side of the corner, you can be on that side of the corner, you can be there. But the person who drew the number, he decides. We don't decide. What you see might be true, and what you see might not be true. But that doesn't change what is true. And that's what the Lord is calling us into this year. As we start planning, as we start thinking, as we start getting excited for the year, or even depressed, let's start thinking that the Lord has gone ahead and the Lord has called us to more. And if we align ourselves to His will and to His passion, I'm not saying your life will be golden, but we will have joy and we will have peace in the storm or in the relaxing time. That's what the Lord has called us to. And the thing is, how we do this, I want to highlight in Romans 12, verse 1 to 2. And I want you to see this beautiful dance that unfolds. And that this is about my dancing ability. But in any case, so just bear with me. Sort of feel like Dean Martin. Or in any case. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies. See this play of I give, so I'm giving. Give your bodies because of all He has done for you. And then let them be a living and holy sacrifice. So we do something, but then we allow the Lord to do something in our hearts. The kind He will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship Him. This is how. Don't just copy the behaviors and customs of this world. Something that we need to do. We have a responsibility. Don't do that. Don't do the customs of the world. Don't conform. But let God transform you into a new person. Like, we have this responsibility, it's both, of how we need to do something, but let God transform you into a new person. And then see these two come together by changing the way you think. And then you will learn and know God's will for your life, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Who here wants a 2026 that is good, pleasing, and perfect in the sight of the Lord? Come on, there's no one who's going to say, oh no. Except for those with your hand down. Let's pretend you're writing. But for those of you who want a good and pleasing way, we need to do something from our own effort that the Lord enables us, clearly. But then also just to allow Him to do something in our hearts. We've all spoken to or even been that person who says, you will not change my mind. That's a sad place. And it's not from a judgment place. It's, my wife and I were speaking about people that we know and used to be close friends, but there was a sort of shift where their perception of truth, just like, this is my line and I'm holding to it. And the more you try and want to have that conversation, the more you realize that you're going to circle the same thing. And there's a space in time where you sort of need to let go, because we can't walk the road for other people. What we can do is we can stand firm in prayer, devoting ourselves to God and to our local church, because in doing that, all these things start becoming open. And I have a practical solution that I just quickly want to touch on for point two of how we actually become holy. Number one, as I said, we need to do something, but the Lord needs to do something with us. And just like, for example, when you do good gardening, sometimes it's not just about adding the right stuff. We also need to remove stuff. And the way that we do that is by joining ourselves to a local body. Because in a local body, whether you're from Galvindale or Karicha or Warm AM or PM or wherever you're from, or maybe you're just visiting here for the day. I'm sorry. But if you're just visiting here for the day, I'm trusting that the Lord will want to connect you to a local body. Because in a local body, we have protection from the elders that I mentioned before. That the entire life's purpose of why they wake up in the morning is to guard, protect, and guide each and every single one of you. Through that, we hopefully get sound teaching, which we know to be true in this church. We have mutual accountability among saints, where we lay ourselves down before one another. And when we see someone drift in love, we can say, listen, I can see this in your life. And in that way, we stay strong, because through that, we get to support one another and we are supported. But never, ever neglect the intentional time that we as believers need to spend with the Lord by ourselves through prayer and reading our Bibles. And if you don't have a Bible reading plan, find one. Ask your elder, ask YouTube. Don't ask YouTube ever anything. But ask someone in your comm group and bounce it off of someone. Do it together with someone and just find a way that you actually read through things more than the scriptures that you already know and actually be willing to be challenged. So just sort of as a summary, God has called us to stay in this world with a purpose as holy people. That's a summary of how we got to where we are now. And just as He sent me, as we see in verse 18, just as He sent me into the world, I am sending them, this is speaking about all of us, first the disciples, and give myself holy sacrifice for them so that they can be made holy by your truth. See how even in us being sent out, we are made holy. I am praying not only for these disciples, but also for all those who will ever believe in me through their message. This is one part where Jesus even speaks about each and every one of us, because we believe because of their testimony. So the third point that I want to highlight is that we as Christians are sent out into this world as holy people. We are sent out and we have an objective. We have an end goal, which is more than just finalizing your holiday home at the end of the year. It's more than just making sure that you do that to-do list that your wife has given you, which is that long. But you will get to it at one stage. I will, really. Any case, so do we really believe that Jesus has sent us? Because it is crucial for us. Because not only does Jesus want this to happen, he actually invites us to pray with him into this. And it says in Matthew 9, verse 35, Jesus traveled through all the towns and villages of the area, teaching in the synagogues and announcing the good news about the kingdom. And he healed every kind of disease and illness. So everything sounds great. All these miraculous signs are happening. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were confused and helpless. I read once while I was reading this just as a commentary, and it says, when was the last time you had compassion on someone? And I was so convicted because I have a love for people and I'm trusting that the Lord will do something, but when was the last time I had true compassion for them? Realizing that they're sheep without a shepherd. Like sheep without a shepherd. Verse 37. He said this to his disciples, the harvest is great, but the workers are few. So pray. So this is a command to his disciples to join him in prayer. Pray to the Lord who is in charge of the harvest and ask him to send more workers into the field. Not only is the Lord asking us to go, but he's asking us to pray for this. And do we realize that we have an opportunity to join in with God Almighty in his eternal salvation plan in bringing people to him, not just to bring life, but actually to give life and through it see life? Do we realize that? Because sometimes I struggle. Sometimes I just see it as, it's going to be an awkward conversation. They want to, what are they going to think? And I find myself having to bring that back. But I quickly want to have an illustration for you. Just bear with me for a moment. At the end of the year, we all, budgets are tight. Imagine for a moment, every time you share the gospel, I'll give you 10 grand. I'll give you 10,000 rand every time you share the gospel. Before you run out, allow me to finish. Before you hold me to something that I haven't put in print. Who here thinks to themselves, you don't need to raise your hand, please. We think that you would start sharing the gospel a lot more fervently. I'm here at the front and I'm like, yes. But that makes me realize, where are my priorities? Really, like, do I care so much about money rather than the salvation of other people? Like, that just hurts me. But at the same time, and before you get stuck in this hole of self-condemnation, please get out of it just for a moment. Because what I've realized in my life is how powerfully we respond when we truly understand value. When we think about eternity, very often it's this thing that's far off, and maybe I don't understand it, but we'll see how good it is when we actually get there, and then I'll be the judge. Or is that just me? And I think what the Lord wants to do this morning is to make eternity so much more alive in our hearts. He wants us to see the prize, and he wants us to start stepping out. And every time we share the gospel, we see the prize of not just what we get, but also that person being saved out of an eternity of hell. That's what the Lord wants to do in us this morning. Because I believe that the promise that he has given us is so much more than just the 10,000 rand. I mean, that's what Jesus did. He said we will be rewarded 100-fold for whatever we sacrifice on his behalf. We see this in Matthew 10, verse 42. And whoever gives one glass, whoever gives one of these little ones, and he's speaking about children as well as some people believe he's speaking about immature disciples, people who are still coming to the faith. Anyone who gives any one of these little ones, even a cup of cold water, because he is my disciple, because they are connected, because you see that they're God's people, truly I say to you, he will by no means lose his reward. Saying, Johan, that's not 100-fold. Just wait. Matthew 19, verse 27 to 29. Then Peter said in reply, see, we have left everything and followed you. What then will we have? And Jesus said to them, truly I say to you, in the new world, speaking about eternity, when the Son of Man will sit on his glorious throne, you who have followed me will also sit on the 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And everyone who has left house or brother or sisters or father or mother or children or lands for my name's sake will receive a hundredfold and will inherit eternal life. Jesus is making clear that he wants to reward us a hundredfold. And I believe, actually, that it's more than a hundredfold. He's trying to make us understand that he wants to give us so much more. But where are our treasures? Where are our minds? Are we constantly just trying to navigate life? Or are we realizing that we're living for so much more? But you know what I've realized as well? Besides the fact that we don't necessarily struggle to see the value, which I believe the Lord is working in our hearts, I think sometimes we look at ourselves and we think that we can't make a difference. We think, what difference can I really make? I want to take you back to the early church when they started. Like, as some of you might know, like, Jesus came to earth, he died, he rose again, he was ascended into heaven, and he gave his Holy Spirit to his disciples. And on that day, 3,000 people were saved. Who here think that that is a miraculous sign that we need to see every single day? 3,000 people being saved every single day. Like, that would be amazing, right? I want to tell you something that would be more amazing and a lot more effective. And I'm not trying to divulge this into something a bit more practical. But did you know that there's something that we call an exponential growth? I had to think about that word twice for my Afrikaans sake. But there's something that we call exponential growth. And I quickly want us to bring up that white graph, please, of how something might look like it's going up, but exponential growth is so much better. So I want to pause for a moment and just say, if 3,000 people were saved every single day, that would be a miracle, right? That would be a great way to evangelize the world. That was my initial thought. But in order to reach the entire 8.3 billion people, according to my last Google check, which might be a bit off by a couple of hundred million, but close, let's call it 8.3 billion people in the world, it would take us 7,579 years to convert everyone in the world. Or we can go and one person connects intentionally with one person for a year, spending time with them, discipling them, loving them, and teaching them to do the same. And then the next year, teaching that person to do the same. So now instead of two, you have four. And instead of four, the next year, you have eight. Saying, Johan, that sounds nice, but it's just one person. Let's quickly have a look at the second graph. Because what happens, the first, let's call it all, odd 28 years or 27 years, it looks like nothing happens. It feels like a waste of time. It feels like no one recognizes what's going on. But if that were to happen, do you know how long it would take for us to evangelize the whole 8.3 billion people in the world? 33 years. 33 years. For those of you who do math and ChatGPT and all of that, please go double check. 33 years. But for the first 28 years, it looks like nothing's happening. The Lord is calling us to consistency, and through that, we will be able to make a difference. I want to pause for a moment and just make sure that I'm not trying to oversimplify evangelism. I'm not trying to make it less spiritual. I'm just saying that if we start looking at, if we really start playing our parts, the world would be a different place. The Bible also speaks about those who won't ever accept the word because they just don't want to. They are too stubborn. I even read it this morning in Revelation in my quiet time. There are people, even in the midst of God's judgment, who will refuse to turn. Refuse. But may we realize the impact that we can have with one single relationship that is genuine, out of the heart, and spirit-led. Does this not encourage us to start making a difference? Because sometimes the easiest way for us to start is by simply sharing what God is doing in your own life. Sometimes we're like, Johan, how can I start? How can I do this? Simply share with someone. You know what I read this morning? What do you think about this? You know what the Lord has been doing in my life? What do you think? Do you think it's true? Do you think it's not? Because now you're not putting that other person on this judgment seat, but you're actually inviting them to judge you. But because you know you're grounded in the word of faith and the Lord is supporting you, suddenly you're bringing them in rather than forcing your way in. And there's a difference when we start loving people intentionally. So just to sort of recap where we are, and the rest is much slower and quicker. for those of you I might be losing, but I really feel that the Lord is doing something beautiful. And it says that God has purposefully called us once again to stay into the world, to stay in the world as holy people sent with a mission. And the last point as we carry on with Scripture in verse 21, I pray that they will all be one, just as you and I are one. As you are in me, Father, and I am in you, and may they be in us, so that the world might believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory you have given me, so they may be one as we are one. See how the Lord just continuously wants to bring us back to one. I am in them, and you are in me. And may they experience such perfect unity that the world might know that you sent me and that you love them as much as you love me. We can do all these things that I just mentioned. You can put down your practical stuff about this is how we're going to evangelize the world, and you've got your game plan, and okay, you do that person, and you do that person, and you do that person. But at the heart of it, I feel the Lord wants us to realize that without love and without that affection, without us being on the same team in unity, in submission to our eldership and the apostolic, we won't succeed. Like, it's not going to happen. Because unfortunately, we're living in a reality where we so often find ourselves where we have a passion for God. We love Him with everything in us. He brings us peace. We love the Word, some of us even. Like the extreme Christians, you know, like level 10, they really like reading their Bibles. Like they really, really do. But sometimes we still find ourselves struggling with His bride. Struggling with those around us. We love God and we love His people. And Luke Watson actually gave, I think, one of the best examples ever that I'll never forget, or I don't think I will. And he said, imagine someone invites you to a bride. He says, by the way, I want you to come. I'm going to bring everything. But by the way, please, can your spouse not join? The first thing that you want to do is, like, the men, like, we need to talk about anger and forgiveness. And the same with the ladies. Like, we need to, because this is my spouse. How can you love me and not allow my wife to come in? Now, we know people are different. But we need to be reminded that the church is God's bride. There's no loving God without loving His church as well. And that's what the Lord has called us to. We're in the world. We're loving Him. We're loving each other. We're being sent out. But we need to have that love. We look in Colossians 3, verse 12 to 13, and it says, Since God chose you to be a holy people He loves, you must clothe yourself with tender-hearted mercy and kindness, humility and gentleness and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Can we be reminded about this? I know it's not easy. It's so important for us to realize here in this moment, and I want to invite us to remember that forgiving someone doesn't mean that it's okay. It's not. What they did is terrible. But when we forgive, we release ourselves and we free ourselves from that situation as the Lord enables us and allow the judgment to come from Him. But prayerfully, can we be at that stage where we start praying for those who persecute us so that the Lord might save them as He saved us? Because whether we like to admit it or not, very often we are on the wrong side of offense for someone else that we sometimes don't even know about. I've spoken to people only to find out that 6 months ago they thought I had an offense. I'll never forget this one conversation. Someone had a conversation with someone else, not to start giving too much detail, but two people that I care deeply about, one was a family member and someone else was a friend, they had a disagreement. And afterwards, I actually went to the family member and said, listen, I believe that things are in the wrong. Like, I think that we need to discuss these things. Only to find out that, and actually causing a sort of discussion or a hurt within the family, only to find out a couple of months later that the friend who I actually stood up for had an offense with me because he kept on thinking that I was angry at him. And for 6 months, he apparently, for about a week or so, he didn't even go to work because of the depression and like the guilt, and he didn't know how to do it because what about this fight? And this is a true story. I didn't even know about this. He didn't even know that I was standing up for him over there. But yet, we need to forgive because sometimes we find ourselves in a hole that we think is a hole. Meanwhile, there's an open door. And the Lord wants to free us from that so that we can free others. I know the church hurt and family hurt hurts the most. I know that. But it's because we care. And it's because it digs down deeply within us. But the Lord wants to free us from that But that happens when we start walking in unity, in new love. And even as we see in 1 Corinthians 13, where it says, if I could speak all the languages in the world of earth and of angels, but I didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy and understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, and I've had all such faith that I could move mountains but didn't love others, I would be nothing. If I give everything I have to the poor and even sacrifice my body, I could boast about it. But if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. And I feel the Lord wants to remind us this morning as we're going into this year, like He's sending us out, but He's sending us out in love as we yearn more for Him. So sort of as a summary in that part, it's just like, as we go into this year, growing closer to Him, can we try not to work harder, but rather try to grow closer to Him? Because God has called us to remain in this world as holy people sent into the world in unity and love. And I just sort of wrote here for myself, as I would really love to share from our heart. As we reflect and start making plans for the year to come, may we be intentional in not just planning according to our desires. In a more practical sense, as I mentioned, the making of beds earlier. Let's not start the year with just everything that's already on to-do list. Like some of us, like we have all these plans, but first I need to put out all these fires. I need to make my bed and I need to do this and I need to do this. And please, husbands, don't even think about using me as an example for your wife while you're not making the bed. I want to encourage us, let's stop and evaluate in our life. Lord, what is it that you are calling me into? Where's a weak muscle? Do I need to pray more? Do I need to connect more with those around me? Do I need to love more? Lord, create space for that. Lord, help me so that I can start the year and set my goals on things that matter. The rest of the things will happen by itself and those things we need to attend to. But let's not neglect the first. Rather, can we desire to spring forth from the fact that we are called by God to remain purposefully in the world as holy people sent on a mission and doing so in love and living accordingly? Can we do that? As we reflect on this, I want to encourage us, just by reminding ourselves, the reason why we are gathered here today is not to feel guilty. The reason why we are gathered here today is because we want to give thanks to God. We want to give thanks to God for your name is near. We recount all your wondrous works. The reason each and every one of us are here is because God died on a cross for us. And He loves us more than anything. And He proved it. And maybe we don't understand everything and maybe we still have questions. But can we realize, like the testimonies that we heard before, people saying, my daughter's marrying a Christian and this is revival here and healing here and thank you for the church community that I'm a part of. Can we reflect on these things and from that say, Lord, I want more? I remember our two-year-old daughter at one stage, I think one of her first words was, noch. Because when we started teaching her about food, it was like, "Vili noche?" And she's like, "Noch." And like, we still have this funny laugh inside of us because that's how we should respond to God's love. It's like, "Noch, noch, as a belief." Can we start this year by wanting more of God, wanting more of each other, and more people in the family?